Yeah.
Here we go. We are live with Raja, and we are going to get into the grooming gangs. If we say G gangs or gangs, that's what we're referring to, because if we say that word too much, we might get in trouble. And all of Raja's links are in the description box. Please support his important work, because, oh my goodness, has he got the inside information on how the government is trading protection of these gangs for votes. We had Maggie Oliver on, and we were like, why is this being allowed to happen? But Raj's background is like a character out of some kind of MI5 bloody shit drama. His background, he just sees through everything, gets to the bottom of things. But I'm going to hand it over to him, because when he went to his hometown, it was apparent what was going on. And he certainly does get to the bottom of things. Huge thank you for coming on, man.
No, I'm grateful. We know we've chatted before, and I'm always grateful to people like you for hearing me out. You know, we've been in the wilderness for a number of years with this, Sean, and it's been a dark place where you start to doubt yourself, and you look back, you reflect, and you think, oh my God, what mess have I got myself involved in, and how am I going to get out of this? You know, and when we last spoke, I think I was on my way to one court case to another, and there's a greater plan for all of us, I think, Sean, because I'm now out the other side. Every case against me has collapsed. We've now got the Greater Manchester Mayor, Andy Burnham, ranting at me on a Sunday night on X, which is absolutely unprecedented, claiming I'm a liar. When pushed as to what I'm a liar about, he came up with something ambiguous that has nothing to do with any of the things we're talking about. And of course, he misrepresented me, which is what politicians do. But I think what's increasingly become clear is that the entire nation and democracies increasingly across the world are fully aware of how wrong the United Kingdom has got, where we are genuinely not just failed in our approach to multiculturalism, Sean. And I said this as a brown-faced Muslim. I think I make that very clear right from the outset. Not only have we, as our strategy of multiculturalism, completely and comprehensively failed, we've been held hostage. We've been held hostage by a small demographic of a community that has influence potentially in about 80 to 90 constituencies. It'll grow to about 100, I think, Sean, by the next general election. And they control and coordinate the vote in such a way, with Labour hugely dependent on that, that they've looked the other way to the most horrific of crimes. They claim to protect community relations, you know, in the name of diversity and protecting community relations, and a whole host of cliches that are out there in the public domain. It's not just me saying this or making allegations. It's completely out there, and particularly in my own hometown, northern white working class in the main, disenfranchised. I've taken the people of my town on a journey where they realised and come to accept that this had nothing to do with keeping people like me safe, Sean, or it was everything to do with maintaining their power and their stranglehold and the lengths that these people would go to do that. And I will name names. I've always named names. I have no hesitation in naming names, because they have already tried to put me in prison and failed. They have the Labour Party. This is the government in this country. Lawyers have written to me, are threatening to sue me. I told them I'll see them in the High Court. This was over 6 months ago. Bring it on. Every one of you, bring it on. Because a reckoning is coming. The truth will be told. And this matters, Sean. They can take everything off me. They can lock me up. My daughter knows the man I am. And that's the end of it. You know, as far as I'm concerned, that's the starting point. And that's the end point. And if I go to prison because I refuse to remain silent to the, you know, and I won't say those words, because we know how we're still being censured and you know, on platforms such as this. But, you know, to the abuse of children, shall we say, you know, the abuse of white working class children, it's completely unacceptable. And if I pay a price for that, then so be it. Absolutely so be it. But what has taken place here is that they have exchanged the lives of little white girls, white working class girls, who, in exchange for power, in exchange for votes from a small demographic of men who have power and influence in the communities they come from, and they have used, and I've been consistent with this from the outset, they have used our own democracy against us, and they have used the system of postal votes to rig elections.
Right, we're going to get to all this. That was a good summary of where you're at. But I want you to assume that the viewers have not heard your story before, and let's just go through it slowly from the beginning and take them on that journey.
Absolutely, Sean.
Let's go back to your background then first.
I spent a lifetime, 20 years, 20, 25 years of public service. Sat in rooms with multiple prime ministers, advice secretaries of state. All of this is a matter of public record. And my specialism is in counter-extremism work. I am the man that you brought in to help safeguard our country and our communities from the nutcases who wanted to strap bombs and blow themselves up. Prior to that, I helped devise the last Labour government's community cohesion strategy. So I sat on government task forces in my 20s. I'm now 51, I'm approaching 52, and I'm looking at you and I'm thinking, well, you know, my hair's still here somehow, okay? So, but that's how old I am, yeah? 25 years of public service, traveled the world, worked across, you know, worked anywhere and everywhere. And I am from a mill town, a small northern working class mill town called Oldham, just outside of Manchester. I came back in 2019, give or take in 2019. I came back with my tail between my legs. One of my projects had gone wrong, and by the time I'd cleared my name, it was too late. You know, the newspapers write allegations about you, but by the time you've cleared your name, no one wants to know. So I'd come back with that. My relationship with my daughter's mother had broken down. Yeah, she was a baby, you know, she was 2-3 years old at the time, and I came back. And my mother, my own mother, had been diagnosed terminally ill. And what I was committed to doing was being a father for a daughter and also making sure that I would care for my mother until the cancer took her. And the cancer took her in November 2023. So for 5 years, I nursed her as well as tried to raise a daughter. Whilst all of this was going on, as soon as I came back, almost immediately as I came back to my town, a friend's wife got in touch with me. Very straightforward. Raja, the chairman of the local mosque, is a convicted sex offender. Please, can you help me? It was my mosque, Sean. It was the mosque that my mum funded. It was the mosque that did the funeral prayers for my mother, you know, just over a year ago. I felt compelled to try and do something. I didn't believe her at first, because we have safeguarding policies and procedures in place in this country that are meant to deal with these things and prevent these things from happening. Indeed, it did end up he was a convicted sex offender, and it ended up that he was a convicted sex offender who was protected in his role because he had a prominent role in the Labour Party and controlled a significant number of votes in the community. His some of the young men attached to his, I call them cartels. So some of the young men attached to his cartels tried to give me a beating because I raised this. I grew up in that place as well, and I have friends as well. So that didn't get them very far. But very quickly, I realized what was going on. They had a good thing going on. They had a cozy arrangement, the Labour Party, the mosque, and it didn't matter who these men were or what they had been convicted of, not accused of, convicted of. They were protected. I ran a very public campaign and got rid of him. And I thought that was it. Got rid of the guy. The mosque privately apologized to me and said, no, we shouldn't have got involved in any of this stuff. And that was it, Sean. I thought, right, done. I can go back to, you know, doing what I'm doing. No, not to be. There was a man called Warren Bates. I sat at his deathbed in April last year. And this is 2019. Former councillor. He'd always say he was a member of 5 political parties. Old working class trade unionist, really, Sean. You know, the sort of the bloke who, when he was 12 years old, was working in a mine. And by the time he was 80, he was still politically active, last time I saw him politically active, he was leading the, he was at the front of the buses. You know, the there was a standoff between Andy Byrne and the mayor and the bus drivers, and he was leading the protests for fair pay. So that's who Warren Bates was. You know, if there was a political fight, he'd be front and center of it. I didn't know him at the time, and this man just ranting and ranting at me in Facebook posts. And another friend of mine got in touch with me and said, Raja, there's this guy called Warren Bates. I know him. I used to be a counsellor with him. This guy, other guy's name is Mohibuddin, senior civil servant. And will you please speak to him, because he's now bothering me. So I said, okay, who is he? I got in touch with him. And the very first day I dropped my daughter off for her first day in school, I dropped her off, and within half an hour, 45 minutes, I was sat in Warren Bates' house, a small sort of semi-ex-council house. His wife was there, Joan, lovely lady. I got to know her, lovely lady. And Warren, larger than life, eccentric, went upstairs, came downstairs, Aldi bag, a dossier of files. And that dossier of files clearly showed how a BBC journalist by the name of Kevin Fitzpatrick, and I name all of these people, you'll see I name all of these people, and I've been naming all of these people for the last 5 years. BBC journalist by the name of Kevin Fitzpatrick had conspired with the then leader of Oldham Council, a man called Jim McMahon, who's now a minister in Keir Starmer's government, is the local government minister, understudy to Angela Rayner. They had conspired to hide the existence of a network of grooming gangs operating out of shisha bars in my hometown, and they'd used the funeral of Lee Rigby and maintaining community relations as the reason why parents should not be informed of what was taking place.
And just for the international viewers, can you just say who Lee Rigby was?
Lee Rigby was the soldier that was butchered. He came from a neighbouring town, Rochdale Haywood, actually, he came from. So it's a neighbouring town to Oldham. And the two Al-Qaeda guys ambushed him and I'm sorry, decapitated him. You know, they really, really, you know, what they call is committed jihad on a soldier who had nothing to do. It was just walking down the street, walking towards his digs, and they ambushed him. So that's who Lee Rigby was. So these cowards used the butchery of a soldier to hide the existence of a network of Pakistani men operating out of shisha bars, where they were taking working class white girls inside and grooming them, you know, and that's what took place. Now, the email trail had another name on it, and it was that man's name was Huey MacDonald. Huey MacDonald had been at the time, so these email trails that go back to 2013, Huey MacDonald had been at the time the safeguarding lead on Oldham Council. So he was the councillor in charge of safeguarding. And also, for his credibility, to give you some context, he was the senior magistrate in the town for something like 15 or 20 years. So this wasn't some loony, you know, who just happens to be ranting and raving. This was a very distinguished gentleman, former politician. And I knew something had gone on with Huey, because he was once a councillor and wasn't, but it was a long time ago and I'd not paid much attention to what happened, because I knew Huey MacDonald from a past life. And this is just the series of coincidences that got me here. Huey MacDonald was a Labour Party councillor in a ward called Alexandra Ward. And part of Alexandra Ward is the council estate of Holtz Village. And Holtz Village, I had four or five great years working there for the Children's Society, the Church of England Children's Society, where I ran a project there, working with kids, homework clubs, after-school clubs, holiday activities. It was great. I had a great time. I was younger. I had an absolutely marvellous time there. And the community there took me in, and I worked with them. It was great. But Huey MacDonald was local councillor, so he'd come in every now and then. So just by coincidence, there's a name on these emails, and that name is Huey MacDonald. So I says to Warren, give Huey a call. So he calls Huey MacDonald up, and I talk to him. I said, Huey, I'll come around to your house. So half an hour later, I'm sat at Huey MacDonald's house, and he gets more reams of paper out. They're all men. They're in the 80s. You know, they don't use computers really. They have everything's kept in papers and filed away in a certain way. And I'm reading this, And it includes, the files include a detective, a senior police officer called Hayden, Inspector Hayden. It includes a whole host of Oldham councillors. It includes even Michael Meacher's office. Michael Meacher at the time was the MP for Oldham West and Royton. And they all knew about it. You know, they all knew about this network of shisha bars operating over a period of time. And the pair of them says to me, please help us. And I'm like, but it's 2019. This was 2013. Because I came from a place, to be clear, Sean, and my apologies to everyone, I didn't believe the stuff about the grooming gangs when I first came across them. When I first heard of them, it was like on the news, the EDL or the BNP and, you know, Tommy Robinson and his guys, and is the far right sort of conspiracy stuff. That's the political space I occupied. You know, at this time, I'm still a member of the Labour Party. Let's be clear. I mean, at this time, in 2019, I'm still a member of the Labour Party. I'd worked for them. I'd advised them for a decade or more. So I'm like, no. And I'm looking at this, and I'm reconciling in my head the evidence in front of me, and it's clear. And I'm looking at these two old men, and they've got nothing to gain from this. In fact, Hughie MacDonald lost his job. He was thrown out of the Labour Party, the party he belonged to since a teenager, because he leaked information to the local connection service. They sort of, we call it positive steps. It's like the 13 to 19 sort of government agency that works with those sort of young people on the edges or provides the additional support. And he'd leaked it to the connection service, and McMahon had called him in, investigated him with a man called Tony Lloyd. Tony Lloyd recently died. He was the MP for Rochdale at the end, but before that, he was the police and crime commissioner. And they'd stitched him up for daring to, you know, try and get this information out there. And some context, and again, you know, the jigsaw pieces fall in place. Tony Lloyd, recently a man called Simon Danchuk, who was the former Rochdale MP, very recently came out. You know, I think I read the article in the Telegraph, so I'm sure, you know, it was in a number of newspapers, reputable newspapers, where he's on record to say Tony Lloyd, whilst he was police and crime commissioner, and also chairman of the parliamentary committee of the Labour Party. So he was the chair of the Labour Party in Parliament. That's how powerful Tony Lloyd was. He told Simon Danchuk to shut his mouth because it'll cost him Muslim votes. You know, so there's evidence everywhere that confirms all of this. So I looked at it. I looked at these two guys. They'd been to the Manchester Evening News. They'd been to the Oldham Evening Chronicle. They'd been everywhere. No one would touch it. And they were desperate. They were like, look, Raja, we know it happened 9 years ago, or 8 years ago, I think it was 7 years ago, whatever it was, 2013. I'm sat there with 2019. But it's still going on. We know it's still going on. No one will touch it. Please help us. And I still remember sat in Hughie's house, and I wanted to leave. Warren said, it, please help us, Hughie said, and I wanted to leave because part of me knew, even though I didn't know, something inside me knew it would, you know, this was a can of worms that would cost me. And I couldn't. I'm like, I've just dropped my daughter off for her first day in school. I want my daughter to grow up in this town. I've got nephews and nieces in this town. I've got friends from across all communities in this town. And I was compelled to do something about it. So I did what I do. I take the evidence. I make sense of it. I'm from that place. So I go and have the conversations with the people I need to have the conversations with. Some shut the door in my face. Some haven't spoken to me since, Sean. You know, and these are people I consider to be friends I went to. Some haven't spoken to me since. And in the end, I wrote an article. I put all the evidence out there. I made sense of it all. And I wrote an article and I published it on Medium. At the time, I was writing for friends of mine. You know, maybe 50 people, 50 of my friends would enjoy reading my perspective on something politically taking place. It, you know, for me, 10,000, 15,000 views on Medium is like unbelievable. And Medium took it down. Medium took it down. To this day, they won't tell me why they took it down. I got angry because I'm one of those working class blokes who doesn't like being bullied. So I'm like, hold on. So I went off and created my own web page. I never knew how to do one. Went and got a Squarespace account. Looked at some YouTube videos and off we went. Yeah, and Before that, the leader of the council, a man called Sean Fielding, he wasn't a good politician, isn't a good politician because he's still a politician somewhere else, who was openly mocking me and saying, oh, he's a liar, he's done this, we've had these articles removed. So clearly the Labour Party or the council's lawyers were, you know, already on this. And I used Facebook. It was the only thing I knew, only account I had at the time. I didn't even have an ex account, I don't think, if you ever look. And my Facebook account was in the main to, you know, put pictures up of me at my niece's sort of birthday parties. I said, got my goddaughter's birthday, you know, happy birthdays and stuff like that. That's my extent of understanding of social media as recently as 2018, 2019. And I campaigned on Facebook. Some of the old women, because Facebook, I think, I've now learned as an older demographic in terms of following rather than the younger ones that I perhaps where it started. And they got in touch with me. Some pensioners got in touch with me, a woman called Debbie Barrett-Cole and a whole host of others. Jackie Stanton, who was a former deputy leader of the council. And I went through what they could do. I said, well, go to a council meeting. I've put the evidence out there. I know it's true. I've put all the screen grabs up there. These aren't, why would I want to doctor any of these documents? Go and ask him. Go to a council meeting and ask a question and get the reassurance. Raj Amir is lying. These documents are false. Go and get the reassurance. They didn't know what to do. So I told them how to submit a question at the council. And back then you fill the form in and then they emailed you back. And you could, you know, democracy in action. The old woman could go to a council meeting, hold up a piece of paper and ask the councillor a question. Normally it's to do with, you know, dog fouling or why a park's not been, you know, the grass hasn't been cut or something like that. Excuse me. And they went to ask the question. What the council did was rigged the public question time. So they timed out the question so she couldn't ask the question. So when she went up to the mic to ask a question, the mayor tried to say, oh, no, we're out of time. Sean Fielding's like they're pretending, you know, he has nothing to do with it. They'd rigged the question time all with mates of theirs, former Labour Party councillors or members to ask useless questions about God knows what not. And you know, northern working class elderly women being what they are, and I was raised by them, so I'm sat there watching it all unfold, laughing my head off because they're not taking no for an answer and they refuse to leave. And were, you know, adamant they were going to get the question in. It would have took him 10 seconds to hear the question and say, Raj Amir's lied. You know, 10 seconds and that would have been the end of it. He stood up and marched them all out of the council chamber. All 60 councillors from every political party stood up and marched out of the council chamber and the police were called. They came back in, she got back up and they marched back out. I think they marched out twice. And all of this is documented and online. You can see it. So they marched out of a council meeting rather than simply provide the reassurance to a pensioner who wanted to know if any of this was true. Because surely it can't be true that a network of shisha bars were operating in the town from where children were being dragged off the street and being abused in broad daylight, Sean. Another council meeting came along. Obviously, we played the game again. This time I went and I took people with me. And Sean Fielding, leader of the council, stands up. And Jackie Stanton asked the question this time. So we got the former deputy leader of the council to ask the question. So she's proficient enough to stand up and ask a question in a certain way. She's passed now, Jackie. You know, these were all old people. She asked the question. And he stands up. And he, again, it's recorded, it's all online. Barefaced lies. I say again, barefaced lies. And Arud Shah, who's now the current leader of the council, is sat next to him. And you can see a scowl on her face. And she says, yes, they are. So you've got the Labour Party leader of the council saying barefaced lies. And his deputy scowling and saying, yes, they are barefaced lies. Of course, they weren't barefaced lies. And the police came to see me. So the police got hold of my details. Again, lawfully, they couldn't get hold of my details because I've not committed any crime at this point, even by their standards. And a police officer, a friend of mine, a guy called Matt Jackson. And I use names. Again, you'll see I'm using names all the time because that's how I evidence stuff. I think from what I can work out, Matt used to be one of those police officers who was in firearms and then decided he wanted something else as he got older because he had a kid and all the rest of it, I think. And he phoned me and says, Raj, will you speak to my DCI? And I said, yeah, of course. Why? What's up, Matt? He goes, oh, it's to do with what you've been saying and doing. I said, fine, I'll speak to him. He wants to talk to you, not under any investigation. So I met him, arranged to meet him in a coffee shop. And so I meet this detective chief inspector, huge guy. I forget his name. He'll come back to me. So please bear with me. And he is keen to have a conversation with me, a decent copper. He was definitely a decent copper. And I gave him everything. I said, this has happened here, that's happened here. By this time, friends of mine from within the Labour Party had contacted me, saying, Raja, you need to know this, you needed to know that. There was a guy called Shabir Ahmed. Shabir Ahmed was the ringleader of the Rochdale Grooming Gang. So when all of this came out, Shabir Ahmed was the ringleader of the first one that came out with the Rochdale cases. That was like one of the first cases. And they called him Daddy. The BBC did the sort of documentary, sort of drama.
Three girls.
Yeah. And they called him Daddy. He was like one of the main taxi drivers involved in it. He's due out next year, I think. And my mate in the Labour Party says to me, Raja, you need to know this. Shabir Ahmed was employed by Oldham Council in a role where he had access to children. And essentially, long and short of it was he was selling kids whilst he had access to children. So no one's got to the truth of whether he was selling the kids he had access to, Sean, or what, because they won't go and ask those questions. But what I have been able to put together was he was seconded to the Pakistani Community Centre as a council employee. The Pakistani Community Centre, of course, was also coordinating votes in the same way my mosque in Westwood was coordinating mosques for coordinating votes for these people. And whilst he was sat there providing welfare advice, his welfare advice included booking appointments in his little black book for some of his customers with young girls in hotels and flats and takeaways. Yeah, not a nice man. So for 18 years, he worked for the council. And separate to that, as I was told, he was a senior figure in the local politics of the town, including a member of the Labour Party. He was a Labour Party player in and out of Michael Meacher's office, who's now passed, and also apparently in and out of Phil Woolis's office. So if anyone comes across Phil Woolis is still around, they can ask him, did you ever come across Shabir Ahmed? Because none of them will admit to it now. There are councillors to this day sat in that council chamber who were friends with Shabir Ahmed. All kept hidden, all kept quiet. And this man, once we finally forced a report out of Andy Burnham, which comes fast forward a few years later, confirms that there were 9 opportunities that Greater Manchester Police and Oldham Council had where they should have intervened, should have done something, and they didn't. And that's not because of mistakes made. That's because of how powerful he was and how they looked the other way. In the same way they did with Cyril Smith, in the same way they did with Jimmy Savile, they did exactly the same with Shabir Ahmed. They looked the other way. So this escalates. Sean Fielding gets angrier and angrier because by this point, we've mobilized an entire town who are outraged in the main working class white communities. And Sean Fielding is forced into a corner where he announces an internal investigation. And the first of the internal investigations involves a man called Dr. Mark Peel. So the newspapers are all on board with him. So you've got to understand the Manchester News, the Oldham Times, they all are that liberal metropolitan elite Labour Party supporting. So they're trying to manage this for Sean Fielding and the Labour Party. Jim McMahon in the background, MP of the town, whose name is plastered all over Facebook, has involved in some of this sort of stuff. I've shared it online repeatedly, shared the documents online. So there's no ambiguity what took place. And I start laughing. Because I'm looking at this thinking, okay, I'm running a campaign on Facebook where I hardly know what I'm doing using social media. And now we've backed the corner, we've backed the council into a corner where they've announced an internal inquiry. having worked in government, I know full well what an internal inquiry it does and what the purpose is of an internal investigation. So I rip it to pieces. and I rip it to pieces in the way I rip it to pieces where Dr. Mark Peel runs away. He'll have done his own work. He'll have gone away and looked at him and thought, okay, who's this guy? Okay, so that's who this guy is. I'm not going to go into his town fighting on his terms with his people over this. I'm going to hiding to nothing. So he runs away. And he's stuck now, is Sean Fielding. Because we're saying bring in the government. You know, all this time, what we're saying is just bring in the government. At the time, it was a Conservative government. Write to the government. There have these, you know, our children have had horrific things done to them. Clearly, there are catastrophic failings that have taken place. Just bring in the government and let's clean it up. You know, that's been my position from the outset. And Sean Fielding does something I think that Andy Burnham to this day will regret for the rest of his life, because Andy Burnham's aspirations of becoming Prime Minister are finished because of how he's involved himself in this. There's no ifs or buts, Andy Burnham, and that's why he ranted at me on Sunday night, because he's finally coming to the realisation of what's gone on. So Sean Fielding goes to his mate, Andy Burnham, who's the Greater Manchester Mayor. Andy Burnham's office had only recently hired Sean Fielding's girlfriend to work for them. So we can understand the context and the background and some of the cosy relationships here, because that's how it is in Greater Manchester. There's a cosy relationship between the various councils and the Labour Party over links. So we often see a councillor in one town works for a politician in another. It's a cosy arrangement. That's wrong. You know, it leaves itself open for what's took place. Sean Fielding goes to Andy Burnham, and Andy Burnham announces what's called an assurance review in Oldham. And again, it's all over the newspapers. Andy Burnham's assurance review. We'll get to the truth. And it's part two, because part one of his assurance review was to do with what happened in Manchester with a young lady who was effectively murdered, Victoria Goglia. You know, she was injected with heroin by the end. The bits of a diary I've read that have been released is just harrowing. If you've read anything like the Anne Frank stuff, this is a million times worse. And I mean that, you know, this is a million times worse. And they agree to this assurance review. And Andy Burnham, you know, King of the North, flexing his muscles, the MEN, the Oldham Times. And it's acknowledged in the terms of reference and in the report that the assurance review is a consequence of me and what I've been releasing. By this point, I'm like, I know the game they're up to. And as people get outraged, I'm like, why are you getting outraged for? What do you think they're going to do? They want to manage the situation. Let's play it out. I look at the terms of reference. I rip the terms of reference apart. And I'm just a bloke, you know, where I am now is where I've been. It's the corner of my living room. And fighting a rear guard action against my daughter's ever expanding Lego collection is where I am. And what was clear was the terms of reference was restricted to 3 years, 2011 to 2014. So whatever that looks like, why? No one's ever explained that to me. And the terms of reference were restricted to looking at shisha bars and taxi ranks in children's homes and excluded looking at schools. I'd released information of how children had been dragged into cars from school gates. Testimonies of children. Testimonies of staff in those schools of how they'd gone in the morning and picked children up from homes they shouldn't have been in with men three times their age that shouldn't have been there. So they exclude schools and they have a time restriction of 3 years. And then they write to me, the council writes to me. They must have, to this day, the people who run the council in my town, in their ignorance, arrogance, I don't know, are determined to portray me as some sort of online troll, conspiracy theorist, far-right activist, and generally not an intelligent man. It works in my favour. To this day, they're still doing that. So I rip the terms of reference apart. And I ask them when they write to me, well, of course I'll give testimony. Of course I'll testify. I've got a dossier. I've had a dossier all along, and I've been publishing bits at certain times to nudge them along, having them fall into traps, and I'll release more info. So we've not done that. That's not happened. All the time I've had the evidence as to what really happened, and then I release what's really happened. So I'm showing them up at every stage of how they're lying, how they're manipulating the people of the town. And they say, okay, I will give evidence providing my testimony is recorded. Is that an unreasonable request? You're investigating. You launched an investigation into serious crimes. Here is your chief witness, per se. The main person who's made the allegations. He is willing to give testimony. I said, I have two criteria. One is either we do it in public, and I'll testify in public to a packed gallery so everyone can see what my evidence is and make their own mind up, rather than you go away and fix a report to say something that isn't what really happened. Or you take my testimony, record it, and print it word for word. You can analyze it as you want, but you print my testimony word for word. Guess what? We don't do that. We take selective notes. So I'm sorry, mate, but this was my sort of response. Yeah. And off we went. And I for 3 years, Sean, Andy Burnham's team were trying to present one narrative, and I was running rings around them. And during those 3 years, because they kept delaying and delaying the report, I used YouTube, Facebook, a camera that I'm looking into now, and educated the people of my town to become politically educated in a way that's never happened in this country, hasn't happened in this country. So a group of predominantly white working class people went out in a Labour Party town and removed Sean Fielding from power. So this was the Labour Party leader of Oldham Council, removed him from power. We got rid of him. The next one that came along was a woman called Arud Shah in a Labour Party stronghold of Chadderton South. Now, this woman's dangerous. She hangs off the arm of a convicted heroin dealer, the getaway driver of the cop killer Dale Cregan, a Pakistani gangster called Irish Yimmy. She openly parties, with red rosettes on her and on the gentleman she parties with, a man called Zia Hussein. Zia Hussein was convicted for kidnap and torture of a young man. The police turned up and found blood splattered all over the walls. He'd done horrific things, including using a broomstick to sexually assault his victims. So these are the sort of gangsters this leader the council's involved with. She's currently Andy Burnham's equality lead, by the way. He is, and also chair of the National Constitutional Committee of the Labour Party. So that's who these people are. And we campaigned against her. She shouted and screamed, I was a racist, I was far right, I was everything else. Had me arrested, mate. Police dawn raided my house. 8 police officers dawn raided my house. Arrested me for being a racist, apparently. Dragged it through the courts. There were 2 people who was involved in my first arrest. One was Arud Shah, and the other one was a woman called Gail Granger. Gail Granger is the wife of a man called Anthony Granger, who the police shot dead in Salford. So there's some associations, shall we say, from the Salford community. Yeah. And again, these are people who are connected to the Labour Party. Gail Granger came to Oldham to campaign for Arud Shah, photographs of Labour Party red rosettes on her. Yeah. So this is, they've got a vested interest in the Labour Party, haven't they? Otherwise, why would they be knocking on doors and trying to get people to vote for them? Anyway, the first case collapsed against me, but the police officer who dragged me one was very clear. They took my phone off me, my computer off me, everything off me. They wanted to shut me down, Sean. They wanted to shut me down. And by the time I'd been released on bail, and bear in mind, mate, I'm a decorated individual. I've got an MBE. I've worked for the government. There was never a need for 8 police officers to hammer my door down, at dawn to arrest me, because I'd written an article on the internet, is what I'd done. I'd written an article on the internet objecting to how the Labour Party were playing with fire around pandering to some of the Muslims who were objecting to what is the issue in Israel. This is before this latest round. And I said, well, you know, there's a Hamas thing here. It's been the Israeli-Palestinian conflict has been used to radicalize a new generation of Muslim young people. So, you know, everything I've said is now no one would disagree with it. It's a matter of fact. And I, as a British Muslim, I was deeply concerned of how the Labour Party was playing with fire and how the politicians who were trying to use this to whip up support for them weren't really appreciative of the blowback that would occur as a consequence of what they were doing. And I say this as I wrote this as a man who spent 20 years in counter-extremism work. You know, it's not like I've read a book or I've walked down the street and thought I'd suddenly become an expert on something. This is what I've got expertise in. And I wanted to raise awareness of where it was going wrong. And the police arrested me, claimed I was a racist because I might have upset some Jews. I asked them, have you spoken to anyone Jewish that I might have upset? They're like, no, but you might have upset someone. I'm like, so the Muslim council leader has complained to you that I've upset her, and you're saying that my racism might be because I might have upset some Jewish person because I'd used the word Kristallnacht. And I'd used the word Kristallnacht in a specific context to say that these idiots were smashing the windows of a Jewish-owned factory in the town. And I said, smashing the windows of a Jewish-owned factory is symbolic. It isn't just smashing windows. There's a political undercurrent to what they're doing. In the same way as if you posted a sausage through the letterbox of a mosque, you know, it isn't just about posting a sausage through. There's an undercurrent, isn't there? There's something more sinister going on. And that's all I said. You know, I don't think that's in any way a racist viewpoint. And I don't believe for one minute anyone Jewish would object to me supporting them and saying, hold on. So these police officers didn't believe that, put me on bail, and I was also meant to have said something about Gail Granger. They wouldn't tell me what I'd said about her when they interviewed me, but I was meant to have said something about her. And I'm like, well, how do you want me to respond if I've said something, if you're not showing me what I've actually said and where I've said it? It was a joke, mate. They put me on bail, and they wanted to teach me a lesson, because when I came out, a friend of mine picked me up and goes, Roger, it's got worse. It emerged that the local newspaper, the Oldham Times, had run a headline claiming that I had been arrested for child sex exploitation. So they falsified the headline. What I'd been arrested for had nothing to do with that. And by the time I'd got home, the Islamists that were benefiting from the relationship and the gangsters, so there's two factions, there's the Islamists and also the heroin-dealing gangsters who benefit from the arrangement they have with the Labour Party establishment in my town. They'd gone on social media and kindly put the article up with a picture of my photograph, with a photograph of me and details of my address in case anyone wanted to come and find me. I phoned the police up. I contacted the police. I still got the emails, even the chief constable, begging them to do something, at least release a statement confirming what I've been arrested for. Yeah, just release a statement and confirm what I've been arrested for. You know what they did? They decided I was a bail risk and put me under house arrest. So for 6 months, I barricade myself into my house at night. I sleep with a knife next to my bed, where the police are complicit in this. And all this time, I've got a six-year-old daughter that I'm trying to be a father to. I go and pick this kid up from school, and I know everyone's looking at me. Because there's the man who's been in the newspapers for what? Allegedly being a child sex offender. So this is what Greater Manchester Police did to me in partnership with the metropolitan elite local press who are neck deep in. You know, when a day of reckoning comes, it won't be just the politicians and the policy officers. It'll also be those in the press who were complicit in what took place. So they do that. I'm on bail. 6 months. I go to court. They call me back in and say, yeah, we're charging you. So they charge me right after 6 months. Me being the man I am, I wrote to the CPS during that time, to the most senior person in the CPS. Still got the email exchanges, and they got very nervous. No, we want your lawyers to write to you. I said, well, no, I'm writing to you. I'm the person who's been charged. I'm writing to you. There's nothing anywhere that says you can't speak to me. There's nothing anywhere that says I need a lawyer to speak to me. I might need a lawyer to speak to you if I was a drug dealer or a drug user or something and couldn't coherently, you know, engage in dialogue. But I know your game. I know exactly how to contact you and what to say to get the information I want. And they assured me that the most senior specialist CPS investigators were looking into my case. Took them 6 months. And on the last possible moment before they had to drop the case, they charged me. And then the documents start to come through. For Arood Shah, they charged me because I'd said things about her that she'd got upset by and had resulted in her getting PTSD. Her face had apparently drooped on one side. Sean, if her face has drooped on one side, it's a consequence of the Botox she uses. You just take one look at her, right? It's a consequence of that. It's not a consequence of me saying anything. And then it transpired that she'd been, and I'm reading her statement because they took her statement after they've arrested me. So the backfilling, you know, they've come and dawn raided my house with 8 police officers, dragged me off, had it portrayed that I've been arrested as part of a child sex exploitation investigation, and the backfilling. So they're desperately trying to backfill with anything they can. And one of the things they backfill with is PTSD. And the other one she backfills with is that she was out campaigning one day and she knocked on an old man's door. He came out and chased her down the street. So I'm reading this laughing to myself, thinking, okay, so an old guy comes out and chases you down the street. Surely the police's response, and she's blaming me, surely the police's responsibility is to go and chat to the old guy who chased her down the street, rather than to assume it's got anything to do with me. Did he mention me? No. Do I know him? I have no idea to this day who this guy is or where he lives. He chased her down the street. Then I'm reading the date of when he chased her down the street. And I pay attention to detail. It's what I got paid to do. I pay attention to detail. The date was at a time when there were COVID restrictions in place where campaigning was banned. So perhaps, and I was looking forward to this in court, perhaps the reason she got chased down the street was because she was knocking on some guy's door at a time when he'd been told that, you know, the world was coming to an end and he shouldn't be getting in touch with anyone. So maybe he chased her down the street because of that. Anyway, that case collapsed in court. She refused to give evidence, ran away. Okay. And at this point, she's leader of the council. So she refuses to give evidence. The other case with Gail Granger is still ongoing. And when she refuses to give evidence, I'm like thinking, okay, that's all right. But the policeman in the lead up to that is very clear that if I campaign, they'll arrest me. And I'm like, well, you better come and arrest me then. Because I've been in the places in this world where the police decide who can and can't campaign. And I'm not going to live in one of those places. And I'll fight not to live in one of those places. Because I believe in free and fair elections, and we will have free and fair elections, and I will campaign against her. He then also he threatened me to arrest. Off I went and campaigned. And at the same time, what took place, and this you've got to understand this, this is real. This isn't me making any of this up. This isn't something that's some Netflix drama series, you know, crime series. Arood Shah's car is blown up. It makes world news. And it's portrayed as far-right racists have blown up a car. The MP, McMahon, goes to the Daily Mail. You'll still find the article in there to this day. Type in Arood Shah's car blown up and you'll read an article in the Daily Mail by Jim McMahon. He blames me for her car being blown up and claims I'm responsible. And I incited it, and they use an article I wrote. An article I wrote raising concerns about the increasing levels of segregation in our towns and cities and where it will lead us. Where is this going to go? And he claims that article I wrote led to people blowing up her car. So the Daily Mail journalist gets in touch with me, and I'm laughing. At this point, I'm laughing. And I'm playing them along, and I've still got the exchanges on X where this happened. Mate, I wrote my article after her car was blown up. So how on earth Is my article going to be responsible for her car being blown up if I publish the article timestamped after her car was blown up? They still ran with the story. They took my name out of it and made reference to me as a campaigner or something, but they still ran the story, trying to portray, you know, she's a victim of racism and, you know, a Muslim woman done really well and this man misogyny and all the rest of it. I couldn't care less if she was a man, woman, trans. It makes no difference to me. What makes a difference to me is whether you're a decent person doing the job you're meant to be doing rather than hanging off the arm of a heroin dealer, you know? And then it gets even more interesting. An old friend of mine, and again, this is where I believe in the end, and I'm smiling at you because I'm looking back and I'm out the other end. I'm smiling at you because I believe there's a higher power here somewhere. You know, when I was around Huey McDonald, my set of skills, my friend's wife, an old friend of mine who went the wrong way, I'll be honest with you, and I knew him from school. We used to sit opposite each other in form. Off a burner phone, he gets in touch with me, uses some incidents that went on in school, so I'd know who it was, you know, from being in school and stuff. And he sends me the video, the CCTV footage of her car being blown up with Raja, you'll need this. The CCTV footage of a car being blown up clearly shows these guys pulling up, knew the door was unlocked, opened the door, put the petrol in, and then with the door wide open, realized, oops, we've not smashed the window, then smashed the window from the inside out with the door wide open, nearly blow themselves up and run away in a car. To this day, the police won't issue a single statement as to what went on. The police are neck deep involved in the cover-up. There's no ambiguity, and this is the, and so we get rid of her, and she goes crying, you know, to her friends, and we campaign, lawfully campaign, crowdfunded the leaflets. I delivered them myself in South Chaddington with a team of pensioners. We went out and delivered leaflets. We got rid of Sean Fielding. We get rid of Arud Shah. And all the time, all we're saying is, give us our public inquiry. Just write to the government and say something really wrong has gone on in this town. Please come and investigate. That's all we're asking for, and we'll go away. No. They vote it down again, and along comes a woman called Amanda Chadderton, who's the third leader. Very early on in her tenure, Burnham's report is published, and they rock up, all of them. And they're very clear. Maggie Oliver's there, and they're all very clear. There's no evidence of a cover-up. There's no evidence of a cover-up. There's no evidence of a cover-up. Your terms of reference did not include whether or not to go and investigate whether there was a cover-up. Your terms of reference wasn't to investigate whether there was a cover-up. Your terms of reference was to determine whether what Raja Mia said was true. One, were children groomed and abused through a network of shisha bars? 100% confirmed, 2011, 2012, 2013. The council knew about it. The police knew about it. The police even witnessed children being dragged into these places. They did nothing. Confirmed. They won't say how many children, but when they won't say how many children, you know the numbers are high. Otherwise, they would say only two children or three children or four children. You know the numbers are high. So 100% confirmed. Raja Mia was right to say that children were being sexually assaulted in a network of shisha bars in broad daylight in the town, and the authorities were fully aware. Oh, but there's no evidence of a cover-up. Okay. Second one was the email I released of the conspiracy between Kevin Fitzpatrick and Jim McMahon accurate. Oh, yes, it was, but it didn't mean it that way. Well, which way did they mean it? He's done, you know, McMahon has done so much. He's done so much to bring this into public attention. And the evidence of the so much, he wrote something in his blog in 2014. In 2014, a council leader's blog was read by maybe 10 people, and his mother and his wife would have been two of them, right? A council leader has a responsibility to stand in a council chamber, issue a statement. He has a responsibility to go to the local newspapers, issue a statement. He has many ways in which he can talk about what's gone on. He can instruct his council officers to issue press releases to all the schools to make them aware. The newspaper should, there's a whole host of things he could and should have done. What he's using as evidence of him doing so much is a statement he released after the Rotherham convictions, after the J report came out in Rotherham, not because of what happened in Oldham. Again, I can read, Sean, and I can make sense of this. I'm like thinking, nah, you're lying. You're absolutely lying. Malcolm Newsome and Gary Ridgway. And not only were they lying, they were just trying to cover it up. So one, the shisha bars was true. Two, the email trail was true. You know, using Lee Rigby's funeral, that's a true email, and all of the emails I released were true. Third one, taxi rank. Children and taxis play a pivotal role. They take the vulnerable to school, all of that. Yeah, taxis play a pivotal role. They're meant to be DBS checks. 100% confirmed in their report that the DBS check, that taxi drivers continue to have licenses, even though the council who issued the licenses were aware that these drivers had been convicted for child abuse or sexual assaulting women. Shouldn't have happened, Sean. Shouldn't have happened. Now, I know why it happened. Those drivers were politically connected. But they won't go into the details of that. But again, 100%, again, what I'd said, proven. Children's home. Children were being picked up outside children's homes and being taken. They were being, no. No evidence of it being systematic. Hold on. So there is evidence of it happening. So what quantifies systematic? And in the small print of that section, Ridgway and Newsom, Burnham's fixers, as I used to describe them as, wrote a line about a place called Rivendale House and used the term innovative solution. It was the council's innovative solution to dealing with children who are at risk of CSE from this specific demographic, essentially. You know what the innovative solution was? They put all the children in the same children's home and looked the other way. To all extents and purposes, they created a children's brothel.
Oh.
It's disgusting, isn't it? It's just absolutely, and the way they're trying to cover this up. I released something today or yesterday in Bradford because there's an MP there who's trying to do a good, decent job. Robbie Moore, I think he's called. He's a Conservative MP that way. And I'm not a Conservative. I'm not, you know, I'm now nothing. I'm politically homeless, if anything. And the Bradford Council blocked a vote, you know, refused a vote to call in the government. And there was outrage because the undercurrent there is, if it comes out, Bradford will be worse than Rotherham. And in Rotherham, there were 1,400 children at least. So the reason they're blocking the vote is they don't want the attention to show that they'll be worse than Rotherham. I released something from a report that they're hiding behind. And the report that they're hiding behind was a thematic review published in 2021. Now, I read the small print. You didn't have to read the small print. It's on page 2. In Bradford, they used a sample size of just 5 children. And the first child they found, the council's strategy for this child, who was 12 at the time when she first started, was to support her to get married using a Sharia marriage. So the council strategy of protecting a child from CSE was to marry her, assist in marrying her off with her abuser, one of her abusers. Oh. It's there in black and white. She would have been 14 if that at the time. And this is, and you're shaking your head, it gets worse. They then facilitated for her care to be transferred to his parents' house and paid them.
That's insane.
This is what they've been doing, mate. And no wonder they don't want an investigation. How many Sharia weddings did they facilitate for children? So everything I came out with was proven to be true in Burnham's assurance review, but they said it was no evidence of a cover-up. And we picked on one thing. Why did you not interview any of the survivors? It turns out It was only through the intervention of Maggie Oliver that they interviewed just one of the survivors. Every other survivor they bypassed and wrote about them instead. One of the survivors got in touch with me. I said, no problem, sweet. I'll record your testimony. I'll tweak your voice a bit and I'll put it out. To whatever audience I've got, I'll put it out there. The police went round to her house and threatened her. This is Andy Burnham's assurance review and their team. They won't even publish how many children were abused in my town during the course of the investigations. McMahon, being the brazen politician he is, used the assurance review to call me a far-right racist, stood up in Parliament, facilitated a debate where he named me as a far-right racist. But in his arrogance, he confirmed how many children, because I couldn't get the evidence, because no one would release it, he confirmed how many children had been referred in Oldham during the period of that review, 2011 to 2014. Do you know how many children it was? 11,000.
Wow.
He stood up in Parliament and said 11,000. Now, maybe some of those were multiple referrals, but you're still talking in the, you know, in just a 3-year period. So I read his 200-page assurance review, ripped it to pieces again, as I do. Example of cover-up after cover-up after cover-up. There's a communications lead. His name is Carl Marsden. If I look the other way, I was just trying to recall his name. His name is Carl Marsden. Carl Marsden evidenced in that report how he celebrated keeping news of the shisha bar grooming gangs out of the news. He celebrated keeping that out of the news. Carl Marsden, head of communications in Oldham at the time, his wife is a woman called Dawn Marsden. Dawn Marsden worked at the Oldham Chronicle at the time. Do you see how always they work together to coordinate the news? Dawn Marsden now works for Angela Rayner, the Deputy Prime Minister. When the assurance review came out, and in an attempt to shut me down and kill this story completely, Angela Rayner put her name to, along with Jim McMahon and the other MP, Debbie Abrahams, Commons letterheaded paper. I released it. It's not a lie. It's no fabrication. Claiming Andy Burnham's review was like the best thing since light spread, and this should put an end to the matter. It draws this to a closure. So now what we've got is not just a series of local councillors involved, not just an MP who was the council leader. You've now got involved both Debbie Abrahams, who's the chair of a select committee in the government, and the Deputy Prime Minister involved in the cover-up. And I'm naming them. You know, people say, oh, why don't you name names? Am I not naming names? am I not evidencing the names? Debbie Abrahams tried to have me falsely arrested. I went and gave an interview under caution where she'd submitted an interaction I'd had with her on social media and doctored the interaction. Tried to have me falsely prosecuted. I looked at my lawyer. My lawyer looked at me. We pulled out the actual real exchange. And you know what they said to me, the police? Everyone does that. So we campaigned. We got rid of... what's her name? Amanda Chadderton, third council leader in a row. You've got to understand, this is 6 years of my life, yeah? I'm on police bail, right? They've tried to portray me as someone who's under investigation for child sex offences, supposed to have blown up someone's car, yeah? And I'm far-right racist, and I'm still plodding away. I'm going to court hearing after court hearing, right? And every time I turn up at a court hearing, the judge looks up because the entire public gallery is packed, mainly full of elderly people from my town who are supporting me. They can clearly see what's gone on and what I've done. Because I don't win in this. Where do I win in this? I'll never work again, Sean, because of what I've done. Amanda Chadderton, and they vote it down again. They vote down a public inquiry again. And Amanda Chadderton stands up in the council chamber and has the audacity to say, you can't say it destroyed their lives. You can't say it destroyed their lives. I used that, crowdfunded. She's up for re-election. But all right, we'll get rid of her as well. The council, the police, Dawn raided my house again. This is the third time now. Dawn raided my house, dragged me in again. It's the most bizarre exchange I've had in my life. No one would own up to arresting me. No one would own up as to why I'd been arrested. In the end, I'd put a video out. They're showing me this video. And they're saying, you've caused offence. I said, what have I caused offence for? These Islamists have been inciting my murder. You've got a case file on them. You won't do anything about it. So I've had enough. I've gone to the mosque that they reckon, you know, they're gonna put an end to me. And I stood outside the mosque and put a video out on Twitter. Come on, then, I'm here. You know, if you're going to do something, come on, I'm here. I'm calling you out. Obviously, they never came, but the police came and arrested me for calling out the people who want to kill me. The truth comes out. They'd sent off a fast-track, what's called a fast-track charging decision. I'd never heard of any of these. So a fast-track charging decision would have meant that they would have been able to put me in remand. Remember, a man who's with no criminal convictions put me in remand so that I couldn't campaign in the lead-up to the election. They wanted me imprisoned so I couldn't campaign against Amanda Chadderton in the lead-up to the election. My solicitor, by this time I've got a legal team, my solicitor looks at me, I look at him, and we walk out. There's no further action. We walk out of the police station. I'm in my pyjamas, mate. We walk out of the police station. I come home. I make my phone calls. The next day, there's an army of pensioners delivering leaflets in Royton South. We'd put up an independent candidate. We removed the third council leader in a row. Following year, I read Charles back now as council leader. Great, because she's a car crash. And we removed the council into no overall control. It is only because it went into no overall control. It took us 6 years with me, you know, being on the verge of being put in prison. The day we took it into no overall control, the evening of the count, the morning of the count, I'm in court. 3 years now, just under 3 years. Answering to Gail Granger's allegations that I've harassed her. I've been all over the newspapers. The photograph you used of me, you know, in your trailer, in your thumbnail, was taken by a Manchester Evening News journalist who was loitering outside the courts taking photographs of me so they could portray me as someone who'd harassed women. Because that was the allegation, I'd harassed her. Complete nonsense. And, of course, when it comes to court, she's on holiday. She hasn't turned up to trial. Apparently, she's scattering her mum's ashes, even though she knew when this trial was. And the CPS attempted to have her evidence just accepted as the truth without any ability for my defence to cross-examine her. They went through that charade trying to convince the judge that is what would happen. The reason why they did that was, remember I said to you, they arrested me and they wouldn't tell me what I'd said or what I'd done about her? Apparently, there was a transcript from a YouTube video where I challenged her. I had challenged her. She had been part of the legal team for Irish Imi, who tried to have me done over several times. I testified in court against him. She was involved in trying to intimidate the witnesses, the other witness. She intimidated him. And I said, I'm not going to be intimidated by her. I don't care who she was married to. She helpfully provided the police with a transcript of what I was supposed to have said. The most senior prosecutors in the CPS, remember, who reviewed my file before taking a charging decision, surely would have checked the authenticity of that transcript with what I'd actually said on a YouTube video. She'd made it up. She'd made it up, and now the CPS were trying to say, oh, no, no, what she said is enough. There's no need to cross-examine her. Oof. The judge threw it out. She was fuming. But the sadness in all of this, Sean, is that happened in May, the November before my mum died. And on her deathbed, she was in tears. Because I don't come from a family of criminals. every one of us, distinguished careers in public service. And this is what the state did to me, because I refused to look the other way to the abuse of children in my hometown. And we march into town, we leave court, and we march to the count. Essentially, that's what we did. We leave court and we go to the count. We've removed them into no overall control. And almost immediately, we force through a vote calling for a public inquiry. And that is the letter that Jess Phillips rejected that I released on New Year's Day. And this is where this new chapter starts. So, what has took place in this country and where the awareness is. And I don't mean this disrespectfully to anyone. Maggie Oliver is amazing. She looks after the survivors and tries to champion them. That's where her expertise is. I'm not a Tommy Robinson fan, but I have to acknowledge his role in this. I think anyone would be disingenuous. I can clearly see I'm not that sort of man. He took to the streets. He campaigned in a different way. That won't get us the results we need. We win this through the ballot box, and we win this through political campaigning and political change. And that's what we've been doing in our town for 6 years. And we forced Jess Phillips, the Minister for Safeguarding Girls, to write a letter saying she won't safeguard girls. And that's what's caused this outrage. And that's where we are now. And that's 6 years of our, you know, 6 years of our work. And it's it nearly killed me, mate. It nearly killed me.
It's a hell of a story, man. I'm going to put your links in the live chat right now, and we're going to start giving you the questions that have come in while you've been talking. I mean, there's so many twists and turns, and just when you think the government can't be that corrupt, it just, you know, you show that they're even more corrupt than you could possibly imagine. Yeah. You've listened to your story has just filled in a lot of the gaps, because everyone's wondering about the mechanics of how this happens. If the party is embedding people who are participating, and those people in return are giving them votes, it's just a cycle, isn't it? It's a self-reinforcing cycle. And one of the questions that came in was, what's the closest you've been to death? Have anyone tried to kidnap you or anything?
Yeah, so what happened was they followed me home from my mother's house. My daughter was in the car. Carjacked me outside her mum's house. My daughter, 6-year-old, screaming her head off, and they tried to run me over whilst they were carjacking me. They didn't want the car, mate. They took the car away, and it was found the next day, and the only thing took out of the car was my house keys. They left the car keys behind, took my house keys, and my daughter's canvas crocodile lunch bag. Left everything behind. My own bag, mate, it's worth, you know, an old Mulberry bag would have been worth a few hundred quid easily. But the only thing they took was my house keys and my daughter's crocodile, canvas green crocodile lunch bag.
Wow. A question that ties into this from Kiers is, Raja, how do you keep yourself safe?
Now I think it's out in the open, mate. It's out in the open. What they do to me, mate, and what they want to do to me, I'm not a five times a day in Moscow in man or anything like that. In fact, if anything, I'm probably more spiritual than I am actively religious. But I've come to realize, you know, I was put here to do this. Is where I've ended up with. You know, I don't believe in one coincidence after another after another after another. And there's a higher power out there, and I trust that. They'll keep me safe, and if they don't, it doesn't. I have an agreement with my friends and my family that they'll take care of my daughter. And that's, you know, that's it.
So Jennifer's asking, why aren't there more men like you from the British Muslim community calling out the gangs? Is it because they are afraid?
Well, look what's happened to me. Look what they've done to me.
Yeah. Jane is saying, I'm from Woking in Surrey, which has the oldest Pakistani community in the UK and the first ever mosque built in the Western world. Is Raja aware of these gangs operating there?
I don't know. I, with the greatest respect, I don't know. What I do know is that Charlie Peters and his team at GB News have released 50 towns and cities, And what I've gone and done is looked at all the places where I can go and it's the same everywhere. You know, where there's a cozy arrangement of overrepresentation of Pakistanis in local councils whose immediate family members are linked to organized crime, high levels of postal votes with MPs benefiting from that arrangement, this the drug dealing and the human trafficking underneath takes place. Exactly the same way. It's the same. The template is the same everywhere. You know, where that template, you know, where those conditions exist, this situation exists.
So, Anne-Marie, Raja, how fearful are you on a scale of 1 to 10 of putting a target on yourself after speaking out? Much respect.
Oh, 10 and then some.
So, MM, when the police or government won't help, what do you do?
We campaign. We fight. We've got nowhere else to go. This is our home. I say this to everyone. Where else are we going to go if we don't fight for this? And the way to fight for this is through the ballot box. We hold them to account. We replace them with people we have. Now, I'm not a reform fan. I'm not a conservative fan. Only because I grew up in a Labour Party supporting household. It took me a journey to get to where I am politically and think that my own could do this. You know, when I say my own, I don't mean people who look like me. I mean the Labour Party, you know, could do this. And I look at this and I think, okay, we campaign. We've got to put our differences aside and we've got to remove councillors at local councils and we've got to elect the leaders who will represent us at a national level. And if that's Labour, if that's a reform, it's reform. If it's the Conservatives, it's the Conservatives. But we now have got to be at a place. This is out. The genie is out the bottle. We're not the far-right racists they portrayed us to be. The systematic abuse of our children is now a matter of public record. Even the Home Secretary made reference to Pakistani heritage gangs in Parliament. This is no longer, you know, they're no longer in control. We're in control. And we're in control because of platforms like this and voices like yours, Sean.
Thanks. Chantelle is saying, is the Sunrise team still failing Rochdale kids?
100%.
See it? Yeah.
100%.
And we've got Maggie Oliver is coming back. We're filming with her in March. She's bringing one of the three girls with her this time. She's going to speak for the first time ever.
A remarkable woman. And those young women, the courage and bravery, Sean, we should not underestimate any of it. You know, whatever you think might have happened to me or might not have happened to me, these young women have endured so much more.
Indeed, it's horrific. And Ray J's asking, how do they justify calling you far right or racist?
Mate, what do you want me to say to that?
It's just, they just pull it out the clear blue and try and attach it to you. Does Raja think Jeremy Corbyn would have been a better leader in all of this?
No. He'd have covered it up just as much. In fact, he would have defended it even more.
The most common question you're getting asked from people is, what can they do to help you?
Follow the work, speak out. All I'm asking for now, and what we're doing now more than anything, is we're asking for people to write to the local councillors, demanding that they convene what's called an extraordinary council meeting. At that extraordinary council meeting, they pass a resolution that goes back to the Home Secretary saying, we want a national inquiry. So every council across the town, we are putting pressure on. It doesn't matter if you're one of the councils affected or not. Every council across the town passes a resolution that goes to the Home Secretary. It's grassroots campaigning. It's never been done before. And this is how you force a reckoning, because they'll have to give us a national inquiry. What the end game for me here, or the next end game for us here, Sean, is a national inquiry. And if we don't get the national inquiry, we use what they've done to remove them at the general election. We didn't get here overnight, and the strategy we've had to get to where we've got to is a multi-year strategy. It's a long game, and we're playing a long game. You know, they will either give us the public inquiry and admit to their failings and put in place the safeguards we all need to make sure this never happens again and everyone who is responsible is held to account, or we hold them to account at the general election. We finally have. It's not just our platforms, your platform. It's not just this. You know, you've got a national news channel in terms of GB News who are championing this. They won't have me on, by the way, and I'm completely fine with that. You know, my story is too extreme for them. Even though I'm not, I'm fine with that, Sean, because they are fighting for us. Charlie and the others are fighting for us, so it's great. You know, you've got a national platform, and then what you've got is MPs on both the Conservative and on Reform who are trying to outdo each other on this, which, again, for me, is fine. Outdo each other. Let's have it. You know, let's have a national inquiry. But let's also move this on so we're very clear that we address some of what this is really about. Because the abuse that we're talking about is a symptom of a broken democracy. And what has allowed our democracy to be broken is a small number of Pakistani cartels, Bangladeshi cartels, Muslims, however, you know, whatever identity marker you want to put on this demographic, who are exploiting the postal vote system and their ability to harvest postal votes to have undue influence over 80, 90 constituencies and growing every year. And I desperately need a politician, an MP, Rupert Lowe or Mr. Jenkins from the Conservatives to come out and say, we will reform postal votes. We'll get rid of them.
Right. A lot of people have asked if you have a template for that email or letter.
Yes, I will. I will do it. I raised it on Sunday. I will put it out. I'm on a train tomorrow, and I will put it up on X tomorrow. So I'll write it up and put it up on X tomorrow, so you can just take it.
I've just put Raj's X in the live chat again. If you're watching this on replay, Raj's X is in the description box below this video. Patty wants to know, do you think it's happening in other countries too? So like France, Germany, would it?
I spoke to reporters in France. I spoke to reporters in the Netherlands, in Germany. Yeah, same pattern.
In reference to Bradford, the council report indicates that the council were facilitating a marriage with a child. This would not be lawful. Where are the police?
So I accidentally bumped into a retired detective chief inspector. Accidentally is the wrong phrase. He asked for a meeting with me. I never met him before. I met with him 2 weeks ago. He asked for a meeting with me. The independent councillor from Failsworth, Mr. Mark Wilkinson, facilitated that meeting. And I say these names again just to confirm, you know, give you the evidence of what took place. I met Morrison's with this retired police officer. I don't have his permission to use his name, so I won't use his name. But what he confirmed with me was that he was in Bradford on an undercover operation with surveillance over a children's home, identified a gang involved in exploitation of children, and he got called into a meeting with the most senior council staff who threatened to have him done for trying to protect children. When he left that meeting, he got a phone call from a very senior police officer telling him off. That's where the police are, neck deep in it.
That's terrible. Okay, so the next question is from Betty. It's 2025. What the hell has gone wrong? It was probably safer for girls 100 years ago. How does this happen? Where have we gone wrong?
Our multicultural model has failed. It's comprehensively failed.
Which ties into the next question. Is it to do with religion or is it heritage?
I think there's a cultural dimension to this. I think these are clearly also racially motivated crimes. And I say this as a Muslim. It isn't the Islam I recognize. However, if the victims, if the survivors are saying they were, you know, what was done to them and religion was used as a justifier, then I, as a Muslim, have a responsibility to go and look at my religion and challenge anyone who believes this is allowed. That's how I see it, Sean. Now, my own people, as in my, who are my own people, but this subset of my own people, I'm close to being disowned in the communities where I came from, you know, in that community, because I see this in a different way.
Yeah, I read the Bible and the Torah and the Quran, and I think that there's so many stories with so many variations and so many interpretations. People could take anything from any of those books and say, it's telling me to do this or it's telling me to do that. And it's warped minds, isn't it, that are taking these
People find a religious justification in anything, don't they? If they want to, they'll find a religious justification in anything. Now, I'm not going to say that now. You know, you look at the Catholic Church, you look at the Church of England, you know, they've all done it. You know, but evil men have found religious justification to try and legitimize what they've done. Now, for every evil man you've come across, I'll find you 10 people of that faith, whichever faith it is, who want nothing to do with them. Yeah. My issue of that is, look, the focal point of this has got to be, why were these children failed? And let's deal with this. Let's deal with this. And if it takes us to a place of racism and we accept that in our country now, those of Pakistani heritage in particular are more racist than the white communities, and racism has traveled full circle, there's an issue that needs dealing with. If we decide that the religious preachers aren't doing enough, then great, it's an issue that we need to deal with. I have no concern over where the evidence takes us. I want us to be brave enough for that public inquiry to take place and for us to actually look to see, well, actually, what's really causing this? And we'll deal with it. How can you deal with something if you don't know what really all of it is? Now, I've shared with you what I know, but I might not have all the, you know, I might not have uncovered all of this because I didn't come to this wanting to do this, Sean.
All right, next question is from Rianne. Will a national inquiry be corrupted by government? Can it be honest?
What do you think we'll do? By you know, there's not just me and a couple of hundred people from my town anymore, is there? There's people from across the entire country who are on board with us. There's people from across the world who are on board with us. Now, all I'm asking people to do is to have faith in me, in able to critique and rip apart and expose any wrongdoings in a national inquiry in the same way as I've done so far, and go on and continue on this journey with me. But we need that national inquiry first, and then we'll worry about whether it's corrupted, because we'll make sure it isn't. And if it is, we'll call it out. Because if it is, we'll call it out, and then Labour are finished there as well, aren't they? Because the end game for me is this is, if Labour don't, if the government, if Keir Starmer and Yvette Cooper and Jess Phillips don't fix this, none of us are stupid. None of us will run away because they call us far right. No matter how many times they arrest us, it won't stop us from campaigning for the safety of children. They either solve this or they are finished.
It's interesting because, you know, they just look down upon us, this political class, and the media is completely manipulated and they think they can get away with anything. Then all of a sudden, Elon Musk is just putting this out there to millions of people. I mean, this is something beyond the comprehension that an entity could come in and rock the world like this, I imagine.
They hate it. But this isn't new. If you follow, if you study history, one of the landmark sort of evolutions of our democracy where people like you and I could get the vote, yeah, and have some rights, was a consequence of the Chartist movement. And the Chartists were from the North. They published pamphlets. They were called penny pamphlets, you know, and it's the way in which you and ordinary working class people get access to the news and ideas and opinions that the elite didn't want them to have. They put the Chartists in prison because they put a tax on the penny papers to make them inaccessible to the working classes. It's the same. You know, the internet is the same as the printing press was.
Yeah, Starmer's, I think I read that he's at 40 years of polls, he's the lowest in popularity. People just are not liking him right now. Do you think there's any way to get him out, or is he entrenched?
I don't think they will leave anytime soon.
Which is a shame.
But we just build it up. We just ramp up the pressure and ramp up the pressure. Don't do anything stupid. And continue on what is without doubt a just cause. Look, the history books will remember what happened a couple of weeks ago. It was when a government voted against a public inquiry that wanted to investigate the systematic abuse of what, 100,000 girls more in this country? How can a government vote that down?
because they just don't value those people.
No, they don't. You know, working white working class girls, you know, in the hierarchy of race, they matter the least.
Darren wants to know if Starmer is planning on cancelling council elections in your area.
So in the next council elections in our area aren't until 2026 anyway. So next year, this coming May is like a blank year, the way in which the election cycles are. But we're okay with that. You know, you need to understand they will make their moves. Don't get angry. Don't get dejected. They will make their moves. You just got to know what their moves are and what our moves will be and how our moves are. We campaign for a public inquiry. If we get it, we'll use the findings to remove the government. If we don't get it, we'll use the fact that they haven't given us to remove the government. As long as the new government comes in, agrees to a whole host of key policy areas that we believe in, such as a public inquiry, such as getting rid of the postal voting system, safeguarding our democracy, Sean, you know? And hopefully, I don't know if the Conservatives are sincere, Sean, because they were in government for 14 years. My Conservative councillors in my town wrote to them, begging them for an investigation. They circumnavigated the council and wrote to them direct. And the Conservative government wrote back and said, oh, no, you've got to write the proper way through the council. If you knew children were being abused, would you care how you were informed? Or you've knocked on the back door. You've got to go around the front door and knock on the front door for us to do something about it.
Just using bureaucracy to stonewall. Stu wants to know, in your opinion, beyond prosecuting the guilty, how do we address the culture of these gangs and take preventative action?
Well, preventative action is punishment, first and foremost. If someone knows they're going to be punished for doing what they've been, you know, they were doing it in broad daylight. Shabir Ahmed, 9 times he was protected. You know, you've got to put these people in prison, first and foremost. Secondly, those who protected them, such as the politicians, need to be put in prison. They need to go on trial. A public inquiry would have Andy Burnham answer questions. This is one of the most powerful politicians in this country, the Greater Manchester Mayor. He'd have to answer questions. He wouldn't get away with, you know, calling me a liar and threatening me with you know, inferring legal threats if I didn't delete any of my posts. Who does he think he is? I have every right to question and challenge politicians on this matter. What's her name? Angela Rayner. How dare you, Angela Rayner, put your name on Commons letterheaded paper to try and kill this? You're a working class white woman from these very communities. How dare you?
Michael wants to know, in what way can the genuine, hardworking, honest Pakistani community be protected by a possible fallout?
Well, speak out. Come on, speak out. Not one of you speak out. Find your courage, speak out. You speak out about Gaza. There are children on your doorstep that are being abused. Why don't you speak about them? Sorry, Sean. It makes me angry about it. You know, speak out. Say something.
DP's saying, are they scared of an extremist Islamic uprising?
Is who scared of an Islamic?
I think that person means the government.
No, the government are in bed with them. And so let me give you an example. When Southport happened, yeah, forget it, whether he was a Muslim or not and when he knew or not, one of Keir Starmer's first reactions was to come out and say we need to protect the Muslim community. I was putting safeguards in to protect the Muslim community. Remember, you know, he came out almost immediately after Southport happened. Now, what the Labour Party strategy is that the Muslims need to feel as though it's the Labour Party that will protect them from the white racists. And without the Labour Party, then the rest of you white people will get them. So that's the strategy. And it's been the strategy that's worked for them for such a long time until Gaza came along. And now you've got 5 Islamist MPs who've cut out the middleman, who've cut out the Labour Party and elected themselves. So now more than ever, the Labour Party need to reaffirm that perception that they are there for the Muslims. And without them, the Muslims will suffer at the hands of the far right. It's a game.
I filmed some of the protests after what happened in Southport, and I was talking to the people, And they were just, a lot of them were just normal, concerned people. And even now, you just turn on the news and it's, you know, they were all far right and they're putting out, spreading misinformation. It's just like they're stuck on this narrative. They won't acknowledge the public's genuine concerns regarding this, the South, what happened in Southport.
And you've seen the leaked report. I don't know if you've read the leaked report yet. That's made the news from the Home Office. But the stuff in there of how the government's reaction and response, the plan was, and obviously they've now backtracked because of the outrage, but they need the working, they need the white working class community to either be too scared to speak out or be demonized where they go to the genuine far right and resort to violence as a means of trying to articulate and have their voices heard, because it, that's the strategy. What we did in Oldham isn't the strategy they want white people to do. It's a long game. It's a boring game. I'm not saying it's, you know, it's an easy win, Sean. You don't rock up on a Saturday and protest and go home. Our policy, you know, in our approach has been very dogged, very systematic, but it delivers results. And the method is political education of the white working classes and political mobilization of the white working classes. And they hate it.
Yeah, well said, man. And thank you for spending so much time with us. Is there anything you'd like to say in conclusion to the viewers?
Please believe we can be the difference we want to see in the world. We will be the difference and we are the difference. This is in our hands. For every reason you come up with why we can't do this, you've got to remember this country, this nation, the freedoms that you enjoy, it only exists because of the sacrifices of people just like you.
I've just put Raja's links in the live chat. If you're watching on replay, they're in the description box. Please support his important work. I'm going to let you get to bed, man, and I'll close the show. Thank you very much again. Cheers.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Take care, my friend. Bye. What a fantastic guest and such an amazing speaker. And, you know, you just gripped going all the way through it. The things that he went through, you think he would back down at some point, but he just keeps going, putting his life on the line. You know, the enemies he's making are no joke, as he described. And they got very far reach. So, yeah, some people were saying he's got balls of steel in the chat. He most certainly does. So please go over to Twitter, X, and you can also follow him on his Substack. And so today we also had Kirby Summers on. She came on about 3 hours ago. We did a two-hour show. Absolutely mind-blowing, exposing Hollywood, Clive Davis and Jay-Z. So if you missed that one, please check it out. And then we've got two experts on JFK coming on Saturday night at 10 o'clock after Beverly. And we're going to be lining up shows for the next couple of days promptly. And if you didn't hear me earlier, you know, they've been coming after me again. 90% of our Diddy content, we had to delete it yesterday. There's an escalation of lawsuits, law threats, situations, which is we're pretty much trying to shut us down on all of that reporting. There's a campaign against us, basically. And when there's a campaign against you, they come at you through many, many ways. So, but we will soldier on, folks, like Raja. See Jen in the chat, must be still awake. Wonder if I'm going to get a good night kiss. Much love and respect wherever you are in the world. Thank you for tuning in. And definitely check out what we did with Kirby Summers earlier. It is mind-blowing. She was 5 years ago, she came on talking about Epstein, and she's been researching the hell out of things ever since, putting it all together.